Welcome to Wellness Renaissance and Gluten-Free and Other Special Diets podcast, supporting you on your unique journey to finding your best health. Hello and welcome. This is Judy B. with Wellness Renaissance. Thank you so much for listening and joining us for our next episode, probably episode 2, putting some things together. Not quite sure what order they're going to all fall in, but I believe this is going to be episode 2. I am really excited to share this interview with you. I am sincerely honored to have as my first guest Dr. Jocelyn Strand. She is a fantastic, knowledgeable naturopath here in Duluth, Minnesota. She's been a guest speaker for my food group multiple times on various subjects, and quite frankly, she was the inspiration and the catalyst for my food group to actually start in the first place. She has a true passion and a great ability for teaching. Her brain is just like this neural network of fascinating facts and interconnected information. It's very, very cool. We really are fortunate to have her up here in Duluth. My intention for doing the interview and sharing with everybody is, first of all, to let you get to know Jocelyn and who she is and what she does, and what it means to be a naturopath. So we chatted about exactly that. What is a naturopathic doctor? Her philosophy, her training, scope of practice, kind of who she typically sees as patients, and a few case studies from her practice as well. And just to give you a little bit of the inside scoop, as you listen to the interview and you hear me introduce Dr. Strand, you may detect a smile in my voice. And basically what that comes from is we sat down to do the interview, I started recording, and I went to introduce Dr. Strand. And, well, Dr. Strand used to be Dr. Zentz, and she's been Dr. Strand for a while, but my old muscle memory kicked in, and I introduced her right off the bat as Dr. Zentz. So we were laughing about that a little bit. So that's where the smile comes in when I went to introduce her. So there you go. A little bit of the behind the scenes insight, if you will. Hope you enjoy the interview. I'm here today with Jocelyn Strand, and she is a naturopathic physician. And I'm going to start by asking you and having you talk about what that means. What does a naturopathic physician mean? And then we'll talk about your training. And I want to hear, too, what got you into this? Like, what made you make this decision over in the form of medicine?
So I'm a naturopathic physician, as you said, ND, a naturopathic doctor in Minnesota. Here we're licensed as primary care providers and trained as primary care providers. But we've been through a different kind of schooling, medical school and residential medical school, just like a conventional medical doctor. But we have different principles that guide our therapeutics. So I'll talk a little bit about that maybe first, is how we look differently at health and healing. Our first principle is first do no harm. We share that with conventional medical doctors. For us, it determines therapeutic order, so we'll start low intervention therapeutics first. So say diet and lifestyle as a first form of intervention to see if that heals a person's condition. And then we're trained in nutritional supplements or nutrition in general, highly trained in nutrition, herbs, homeopathy. We're trained in physical medicine, including hydrotherapy and even manipulation of the spine. In some states we do. It's not as thorough as chiropractic, but We are trained in some of that as well. And we're trained in pharmaceuticals and minor surgery, and those would be at the end of our therapeutic order, sort of as a last resort, although at times those are necessary intervention as well, obviously, if people need to be stitched, or there are some times where pharmaceutical intervention saves lives, and you know, when people are very, very sick, where a pharmaceutical can be, in our world, even would be a good intervention or an appropriate intervention. So the scope of our practice or the scope of our licensure really varies from one state to another. Some states we don't have any licensure. In other states, we have a full scope of practice, and we can practice just like a medical doctor or a doctor of osteopathy. So here in Minnesota, our scope is limited. We cannot prescribe pharmaceuticals, and we cannot do minor surgery. I can order labs, and I do the same system of diagnosis as a conventional medical doctor, but I would look at that condition differently and treat the condition differently. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That's one of our primary principles that guides our therapeutics. And then I would say our next sort of important principle is nature cure is what it's called. And it's the healing power of nature. And so just if we get a scratch, our body will heal itself slowly. We hold this true for the entire body. Chronic illness and illnesses of all kinds, that the body is constantly working towards a state of health. And so this healing power of the natural way of being in our body is to heal. And if we can get out of the way and give the body what it needs, that the body will do its own work and heal itself oftentimes. And also that includes, that nature cure includes, in my, the way that I practice, it includes a connection with the natural world, that we are dependent upon the natural world for our, for health and well-being as well.
Right.
Okay. And the health of the natural world, the health and well-being too. So a third principle is doctor as teacher. So lots of time teaching patients about, I'm doing a lot more describing here, so I feel a little off my, I have to check in a little bit more, but so doctor as teacher, so there's a lot of educating the patient about why their body might be doing what it's doing. Why is it important to take gluten out of the diet? Why is it important to get an antimicrobial on board when someone has, you know, gastrointestinal conditions, or, you know, so all of these, a lot of descriptions about why, and helping the patient understand why it's important to be compliant with, I think what we ask them to do is a lot more complicated and takes a lot more work than a conventional medical doctor. Often people will leave with a prescription or a request to change your diet, but not a lot of support about, you know, what does that look like and how do I follow through with that? I think when people have an understanding of why something is happening in their body and the importance of the therapeutic, then they're much more likely to find that healing themselves and to be compliant too.
Right.
from a medical standpoint. We also have finding and treating the cause of disease as one of our principles. So that means that we look for, you know, look at the person's whole body. That's another principle actually, is treating the whole person. What we would do is look at all of the symptoms that a patient has and try to draw out any kind of common potential cause and use all the symptoms as a constellation to point to a condition that may be underlying, and to always try to understand why is the body doing what it's doing, because it's always trying to heal. So oftentimes symptoms are an expression of an underlying attempt at healing. So making sure we treat the underlying cause. Also, if there's an underlying cause and you just treat the symptom, then the condition will continue to return. Right. And we can talk about examples of that down the road here. So treating the whole person, I'll go back to that one, backtrack just a little bit. So treating the whole person means mind, body, spirit, emotional plane, all of those, a mental plane, all those need to be addressed for a person's whole healing to be addressed. And I ask every person in my practice what their spiritual beliefs are to make sure that they have a spiritual practice in place of some sort. Especially the people that I see tend to be people who have chronic health complaints, and that can be so useful for treating chronic health complaints to have something to fall back on, mm-hmm. so that people don't lose faith or they don't feel hopeless as they're going through these therapeutics. And just making sure, do we need to pay attention to a person's cognitive plane? Where do we need to be to affect healing? And most of the time, I would say, in my first visit, second visit, we're talking primarily physical. And if we hit a plateau, or if people aren't feeling well, if they're not happy, then we look deeper. We'll dig deeper, so that we making sure we pay attention to all of those realms. And then our last principle is prevention. So easier to prevent a disease, mm-hmm. than to heal it after our body has already gotten to the point where we are symptomatic. If we can eat healthy foods and have a healthy lifestyle, including some meditation or, you know, time in the woods or whatever it looks like for people to keep their bodies physically active and their minds active and their emotions happy, you know, mm-hmm. primarily, then we don't get to the place where we have disease develop as easily. So right. Those are the principles that guide our therapeutics. A really long description of those principles, much longer than I usually do, but I think it's helpful for people, yeah. to understand where we're coming from when we're developing our therapeutics.
Right.
And why I ask people to do the things I do, because sometimes people look at me like, really? I'm going to take out gluten and dairy and eggs and sugar and soy, like all of those things are coming out today. And oh, how about corn? That one too, right? So, you know, I think it really helps people to understand why.
Right.
Because of those things.
Well, and our American diet and in the America we live in, you hear that and you need some support to go, okay, what else can I eat? Because people hear that and they're like, there's nothing else I can eat. And there's a beautiful buffet of things left to eat.
Right, exactly.
You're reminded of them.
Right, it's just those foods. That if you're eating primarily a processed food diet, the foods that are most irritating are in almost all of those foods.
Right.
I have lots of different levels in terms of where people are at in their health journey. And I'll have people that are eating a standard American diet when they come in. And I have people who are eating healthier than I am when they come in, who are... I have no suggestions for those people. For diet, we move on to other areas to treat. But it is, I think, also confusing because there are so many different diet paradigms, mm-hmm. out there. We've talked about this before, right? There's vegan, there's paleo, there's vegetarian, there's lacto-ovo. I mean, there's so many. There's the GAPS diet, and there are, you know, other therapeutic diets.
Right.
And
Oh my gosh. I mean, a while back, somebody was telling me about a diet that a doctor was using to work with patients that he was apparently having success with. That was eat from the sun. You start in the morning eating foods that are closest to the sun. And as the day goes, you eat foods that are closer to the ground.
Wow, I'd have to think about that. I mean, what I mean by that is I'd have to really think about what is closest to the sun.
Well, and her and I were talking, about what foods to eat before you go to bed. And I'm like, well, according to that diet, then potatoes would be what you would eat
for dinner.
For dinner. And she was like,
good vegetables. And you'd have to eat an eagle for breakfast.
An eagle. Aww.
I'm kidding. Or vulture. Not really.
So tell me, what got you in this direction of naturopathic medicine as opposed to
conventional?
Yes.
Well, so I was pre-veterinary medicine in school, and I didn't really have a framework as a 18-year-old for why it didn't sit right with me when I was learning pre-vet med. And my first book, the name of it was Maximizing Productivity in Scientific Farm Animal Production. What I learned, and I worked in the laboratory facilities at the University of Minnesota, everything we were learning was about how do we make the most money off of these animals, which is not why people generally, I don't think, go into veterinary medicine. I think most of us go in there because we love animals. Yeah. But I was like, my rebellious way of shaking my fist was to drop out, right? So I'm not saying it served me. But at the time now, in retrospect, after taking some time off, going to different schools and letting my own journey unfold, I really realized that it was the allopathic and the Western model that was really hard for me. I had grown up reading James Herriot and all things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, the small country vet. And it wasn't that, I'm sure I could have done that. Now in retrospect, I could have made my clinical practice whatever I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. But at the time it felt very distasteful to me, the entire, and I wasn't even in vet school yet. I was a freshman in college, right? Mm-hmm. So I have always felt very connected to the outdoors. I love being in the wilderness. I love swimming and hiking and being outside as much as possible. And so, my first real spiritual experience was with nature. And so I've always had that sort of bent towards I'm too young to be a hippie, I guess, but like that sort of feeling really close to the earth and loving the earth. And it's easy to get pulled away from that too, but that in terms of real meaning, that's where I found, some books about earth-based spirituality. So I started to sort of lean in that direction. And so I was studying environmental sciences and I had a biology and environmental studies double major at Michigan Tech. And my dad had a heart attack while I was living there. Mm. Suddenly, we didn't have any idea he was even sick, and he went into the hospital. He had an immediate, emergency triple bypass surgery. And at that point, I thought, there's got to be a way. And I'm not even sure at that point that I really believed that you could prevent heart disease. Mm-hmm. Because I was ingrained in the Western sort of view of we all, once you turn 40, right? And somebody says, oh, you're just getting older. Right. I've seen that in the doctor's office. Sitting with the rheumatologist, you're just getting older. I don't buy that anymore. Now that I've been in practice for 10 or 11 years, you feel older, yes, you might feel older, but there's a reason for that. It's because we're inflamed or because we're fatigued or, we've been doing too much or there's something else going on. Mm-hmm. And we find more of that all the time with the blue zones, if we can talk about that another time, mm-hmm. And you're probably familiar with that, but mm-hmm. there are cultures where people are comfortable into their 100, until they're over 100 years old, nice. And they have no joint pain and they have no fatigue. And they have, we are designed, it's my really strong belief that we are designed to live in comfort and ease and happiness on this planet if we make the right decisions and with some help, right. Sometimes from each other. After my dad had the heart attack, I think it was like really early days of the internet. Like we're talking 1998 here. And I didn't even know what I was doing. I didn't even know enough to close my email down after I walked away from a computer. Uh-huh. One of my classmates was like, you left your computer open. And I was like, oh, I have to log out. This is about that era, right?
Right. Awesome.
So things have changed since then in terms of all of us being a little more tech savvy, thank mm-hmm. goodness. But I think I looked up on whatever search engine it was, Yahoo or something, natural medicine. And I saw Bastyr University's website came up about naturopathic medicine. I'm like, naturopathic medicine, that sounds pretty hokey. It's exactly what I thought at the time, right? I'm like, this sounds silly. And then I looked at their curriculum and it was, you know, it laid out for me like the however many credits, I don't even know how many credits we did, but you know, it's, so I had an undergrad at that point. After I saw that, I went and interviewed Nature Cure and I was like, this is what I want. You know, at that point I was really well directed. After that, I dropped my environmental studies major, finished up my biology degree in short order and applied for medical school there.
Nice.
So yeah, and the rest is kind of history, and it's been a rocky road at some points, but it's a really marvelous career in terms of feeling like I'm doing some good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And watching people, you know, I feel, most of the time, I feel pretty good about the journey that I get to take with people.
Yeah, no, agreed. And I think just from my perspective of, you know, the difference between naturopathic and allopathic, it's the difference of the time you take. Like you say, you spend the time to educate people. And so it is, it's so much more time as a patient that you get to spend and you get to understand what's going on. And I think, I mean, that's something that so many people struggle with when they go to the doctor. They get their, you know, 7 to 15 minutes and the doctor doesn't really know them. And
right.
You walk away and, you know, you go in next time and you don't get a chance to talk about all the things that they really need to know that might key them into what's actually going on.
Right,
so
right.
I think that's just such a huge piece of importance that I think a lot of people miss out from. I feel like in Minnesota, naturopaths are kind of this thing. They're kind of over to the side because nobody really understands. They either see them as slightly woo-woo or they're not kind of in the mainstream enough where, like,
right.
When you hear about Portland and some of those areas where they're
right.
just, it's just another doctor being
right.
in the same building. It's just not that there's another choice you have.
Right.
You know.
Yeah,
really
and
cool.
I hope we'll get there in Minnesota. I think it just takes time. And I think that the consumer desire is huge now. I mean, much different from what it used to be. People really appreciate this. And I am lucky. I get to spend an hour and a half with the first patient and first office call, first time I see someone, and then 45 minutes for follow-ups. And it's really different. And I have seen some medical doctors as patients in my practice.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them has said they can't do what I do because they wouldn't have a job,
right?
And so
right.
their hands are tied too. And people don't go, most people, especially I think general practitioners, don't go into medicine. I mean, they go into medicine wanting to help people and heal
mm-hmm.
people. They go in with a pure heart and they really want to help people. And then this, the way the system is, really makes it hard for them to get to know, to have that time to be a family practitioner in the way that people used to be family practice doctors, where they knew the whole family and they understood the whole, all of their family history and, you know, really knew the personalities and what came into play with the patients. I feel really lucky that I get to do that.
That is, it's an interesting thought around that. I mean, when we think about that's what being a physician used to be,
mm-hmm.
what a different way to practice, what a kind of, I don't even know, just like a different melding of the minds of with your patients and their families and how you treat them
right.
and what you know and all of the things that you know, instead of this, somebody walks in the door and they walk out and that's it.
Oh yeah,
you
the
know,
average time
what a difference.
Right now with a medical doctor is 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's very frustrating for both the patient and the physician, and it's not, they're not the ones that get to make that decision. That's the problem, I think, is that, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, I talked with a medical doctor at a conference. He was set up, and this guy's been practicing for 40 years. He's a well-seasoned physician. Their standards of care it's just not possible for him to achieve what the administration expects him to
right.
achieve. And then the administration is sitting above him, on the floor above him, watching what he does, you know, in between patients. He can't see the patient rooms, but they can see the area where the all of the physicians and the nurses are working, and
uh-huh.
and they feel like they're
oof.
In a fishbowl.
That's hard.
Anyway, so, you know, that's not, he left. It's not serving the patient or, he said, the delivery of healthcare, but it's not the delivery of healthcare. That's not what's happening in that space. To me, in my opinion, it's the, you know, it's a profit.
Right.
Generator.
Right.
At that
exactly.
point, it becomes that, right?
You do enough. You check the boxes of, okay, they got these three things, so it's got to be this. And then
right.
when it's not that, I mean, I know this as a patient. When it's not that, they get frustrated with you, or they don't know what to do with you because you're not fitting their mold, and
right.
they don't have time to deal with you. And if
right, right.
you don't have enough issues wrong with you that they can't justify spending more time.
Well, that was his, what happened for him is that he had to, they're supposed to have a certain BMI, a certain blood pressure, a certain blood sugar. They had to have all these constellation of all these things checked off the box, right?
Uh-huh.
But then, and otherwise he's losing 20% of his salary, right?
Oof.
So then if he achieves that, they leave because they're healthy and
right,
well.
Right.
And then then he hasn't seen them enough for them to be included in the study.
Wow.
So it's like he couldn't win no matter what he did, right? Uh-huh. So, but it's just, you know, the problem is that who has the right to be practicing medicine are, you know, physicians, right? But that's not who ends up practicing medicine. It's the administration, the insurance companies,
right.
The pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah,
so,
that is interesting. So if you're really healthy and your doctor keeps asking you to come back, it's just because they're trying to keep their balance.
Right.
Well, please come back in 6 months, please.
Right? It's the reward comes from, you know, it's a messy system right now.
Yeah.
And it's a messy system for delivering adequate and healthcare that feels really good for both the patient and the physician. So luckily I'm practicing outside of that model and I get to sit with the patient as long as I want to and treat how, you know, I see fit based on my own clinical experience and the studies and the information that I have. And if a person is different from the last person, say both people have diarrhea, but they have a different history,
mm-hmm.
I get to treat those two things differently. I don't have to follow I don't have to go open a recipe book and say,
right.
Or blood pressure would be an easy one. Like the tools for blood pressure in the conventional medical world are all of the different blood pressure lowering medications. That's it. And in my realm, what's causing the elevated blood pressure? You know, is it a magnesium deficiency? Is it a high stress level? Is it heavy metal toxicity? Is it a gluten sensitivity? Like those are the things that we need to
mm-hmm.
identify and eliminate so that, because it's not the same for every person that walks through the door.
So for the people that you see, like give me an idea of kind of generally where they're at in their health journey.
I will work with anyone that wants to work with me, you know, in terms of condition. But there's a certain kind of patient I think that ends up coming to me. And those are patients, most often they are patients with complex illnesses. So they're people who have been sick for a while and haven't been able to get well in the conventional medical model. Sometimes I have people who have always worked in the natural realm, but I would say not most of my people are not that. Most of the people I'm seeing have a chronic condition and they've been sick for a while. Medications either aren't working or they're giving them side effects that they don't want, or they're drawn to treating the cause of disease. They know something else is going on. And so those are, I would say, sort of some groups of complaints would be gastrointestinal stuff really often. So gas, bloating, discomfort following meals, irritable bowel disease, which is different from inflammatory bowel disease. So there's irritable bowel, which is alternating constipation and diarrhea, or it can be just one or the other of those things. And not a dangerous disease, but an uncomfortable disease and can be life-altering for some people, where they know where all of the bathrooms on their route home are, right? So I have patients who have known that, right? Like, okay,
right.
I know there's at that gas station. So that's life-altering disease,
yeah.
Right? Or discomfort. And then there are inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, and ulcerative proctitis that are much more serious and potentially life-threatening. And so I see quite a bit of that as well in my practice. So because the medications for those drugs are very, very high-hitting and come with very serious side effects, so some of them do. And so we can try to treat underlying cause with those. I see a lot of hormonal dysfunction, both perimenopausal and menopausal stuff, but thyroid dysfunction as well as infertility, PCOS, that sort of stuff. So lots of hormone dysfunction. I see a lot of other autoimmune issues as well, including, so now we're kind of crossing over, right? Because there's autoimmune thyroid and there's autoimmune in the gut, which we already talked about, but there's also rheumatoid arthritis and multiple sclerosis. And there, you know, there's just a whole slew of different autoimmune diseases as well. So a lot of the people I see are pretty chronically ill or have not been feeling well for a long time. And sometimes it's just fatigue. I haven't been feeling good, brain fog. You know, I have a young man patient right now who has really serious brain fog for the last 2 or 3 years, is really missing out on his children's life because he can't seem to function. And so we're working on treating the underlying cause for him, which was Epstein-Barr viral infection. Not just Epstein-Barr, but a number of other opportunistic low-grade viral infections that were going undiagnosed, but causing him to not feel well ever, basically. He never felt well. So he's starting to improve, but it's taking some time, and he's been sick for a long time. And I'll say that's another thing about our medicine is that sometimes it's like magic. People take gluten out of their diet, and I'll share one of those magic case studies with you. And it's like, you know, within the first month or two that people's health really turns around.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it takes time and it's really hard. It's hard when you're working hard not to see changes faster and to stick with a protocol that can be expensive, can be hard work to plan your diet, to, you know, all of
right.
all of the things that the expectations that, that I might have as a, or the requests, I guess, because each person's health is up to his or herself, right? I don't get to lay out what a person does. I get to see where they're at and what's going to be realistic for them. It's easy to get discouraged, I think, for people if they're not feeling well within the first month or two to stay the course, but it does sometimes take some time, or it can be a slow healing process.
So it's interesting because I think I'm hearing like all the things you're talking about. You don't get the easy come in for a checkup, you know, like, oh yeah, your blood pressure's fine. Oh yep, your this is fine. Your people have issues when they walk in the door. You know what I mean? It's not.
That's very true.
It's not like you're always working to figure out what to do, what might work with them,
yes.
or what might be going on,
yes.
rather than, you know, well, that was easy. Everything's fine. You're fine. Okay, see you in a year.
Yeah,
you know?
Not much of that. Although sometimes on the second or third visit, we have that.
Uh-huh.
We have that. Okay, you're good.
I
hate to say it, but I'm not going to get to see you again anytime soon. But no, you're right. But it's part of what I love about
right.
my job is it's very intellectually stimulating for me to each person that comes in the door is like a puzzle. For
mm-hmm.
me, that I get to work to try to figure out based on my education in physiology and, you know, and then, you know, all just the reading, the ongoing research, it's just all the time we're learning so much more about, you know, the microbiome and what's growing in the gut and its importance on the rest of our health. I have some really interesting research, just heard some really interesting research last week. I'll have to share with you about that. I mean, just fascinating stuff. So there's all that stuff, and I just love that piece of it that I do get to think about what I'm doing with my patient, and I do like it if I can help them resolve their issues.
Right.
And I do have, you know, of course, there are some patients that are mysterious to me that we haven't gotten where I'd like to go, but for the most part, people do see improvement, if not resolution of health complaints, so, and that's pretty rewarding.
Well, and that seems to be, I mean, pretty common with all of the naturopaths that I've ever met. Is that the fascination and the interest to keep researching. It isn't just
right.
to go to school. And I know that that's true for most doctors too, but I know I also hear a lot of doctors say, I got a full load.
Right.
I don't have time.
I think that's what
it
is.
You know, I just don't have time to do all the research that I would like to do.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I really think that's what it is.
And I can understand that. You know, after a busy day of zipping out and trying
right.
to every patient, your mindset has to go there.
Oh, I talked to a doctor the other day who sees 60 patients a day.
Wow. That's a lot.
I'm pretty proud of myself when I get through a day of 7 people. I'm like, man, that was a busy day. You know, I mean,
yeah.
It's just I'm lucky what I get to do.
It's awesome that you love, I mean, and that comes through to your patients too, that you love doing what you do. And so when we come in the door and we maybe don't know what's going on with us, it isn't frustrating to you.
No, it's not.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's
fun.
It's nice because it's like that. I guess I'm thinking of conversations I've had with people where they're like fearful to go to the doctor because they're like, okay, I'm not getting help, but I'm what's next? And is it going to be scary? And just,
sure.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's not that feeling, at least.
That's nice to hear.
You know? Yeah. It's good.
I'm happy to hear that.
So tell me about your case studies.
Okay, so I'll tell you a couple of case studies. I'm going to tell you my most dramatic case studies.
Okay, cool.
Because there are certain events when you're a practitioner. You come out of school and you think, okay, you have all this, you have all 4 or 5 years of medical school on top of your undergrad and sort of a well of knowledge, but no way to know how to apply it, right? So you come out. And at first, honestly, I would think, is this really going to work? You know, and when I recommend a diet change or a supplement based on the research I'd done, I was so wet behind the ears. And this still, you know, still sometimes I think I see conditions I've never seen before. And so then I think, okay, this may or may not work. At least now I feel like I have enough confidence to be able to understand if, or I've seen enough clinically that I don't feel scared of those patients anymore. But when you first come out of school, I was scared of those patients. I'm like, oh, I have no idea what to do. So one of my first patients here in Duluth was a patient with multiple sclerosis, and he was on 3 medications, a daily injectable, and then a couple of other medications, one for fatigue, and then one other. And he had a number of health complaints related to the MS, obviously fatigue, some dizziness. He had chronic joint pain in his knees and ankles and weakness there. So we tested him for foods. He was eating the standard American diet and maybe not quite maybe not quite the standard American diet, because it was like he wanted to lose weight, so he was eating a Slim Fast bar for lunch and drinking Diet Coke, right? So it was pretty interesting. His diet was really, you know, was not a healthy diet. There was not a lot in the way of whole foods, lots of color in his diet, not a lot of nutrient dense foods. So we tested him for food sensitivities, and it actually took my breath away when I opened up his test results, because this was antibody testing at that time. I did antibody testing. I do a different kind of testing now, but this test showed his reactivity to many, and if not most, of the foods to be very, very high. So he clearly had an issue in his gastrointestinal tract. But dairy, his main ones were dairy, eggs, and gluten. So instead of taking all of the foods out that he was reactive to, we started with those three. And in 3 months, he lost 53 pounds.
Whoa.
And it was inflammatory weight. So that way, you don't lose weight that fast unless you're retaining fluid and inflammatory mediators, you know, because of the amount of inflammation in your body. So he lost that much weight in that amount of time. His knee pain resolved entirely. So his knee pain was actually inflammatory knee pain as a result of foods that he was eating. Fatigue went away. And so here he's treating a bunch of symptoms as MS symptoms that were actually food sensitivity symptoms instead, right? Now, years later, this is years ago now, he's off of all of his medications, including the daily injectable Copaxone, has not had a relapse. I guess it's been 8.5 years since his last relapse, and he was relapsing every 2 to 2.5 years before that. So pretty amazing, right? And very straightforward, very simple, not easy, right for him, because now he pays really close attention to what he's eating all the time, but so powerful as a gift to me to show, to lay out with total certainty the importance of identifying food triggers for inflammation if a person has an inflammatory disease, and how powerful it is when you take control of that part of your life and affect the change that you'll see in the patient well-being, and his life couldn't be more different from how it was before. And so it's not always that straightforward, right? So sometimes that's playing a part, and maybe stress is playing a part, and maybe we can have heavy metal toxicity or an infectious disease of some kind that are all playing a role, and we have to address more than one of those things in order to see a person get to that level of health, back to that level of really good well-being and good health. Sometimes we need to do more than that, but that was a pretty remarkable experience, right?
That's amazing.
And it really got me into identifying food triggers, and I attend conferences for alternative, you know, sometimes for alternative care providers, and there's one person in particular who every year he says, oh, those food sensitivity tests, they don't work. How many people in the crowd use food sensitivities? I always raise my hand, you know, it's every year he says this, and I think, oh, he's not doing a service to the patient population by discouraging practitioners from using that. And it's not just this one case study. It's, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people that I've been able to witness their experience with identification of food sensitivities now. So,
wow.
So that's my first one. Let me keep going.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Second one. These are my most dramatic ones. Remember that, because not all of the people are like this, but this is another person who, this was 3 years ago that I saw this patient for the first time. She was 3 years old. Her mother brought her in to see me because she was having a respiratory response that looked very like asthma after she would eat, but it was not consistent and it was quiet. So she would be doing something and turn around and her daughter was blue.
Oh.
And her mom, you know, at that first office call told me, I don't think she's going to live to kindergarten.
Oh my goodness.
I am so scared for her well-being. And her daughter was sitting on her lap. She was just very petite, 30 pounds, which, I don't think is outside the normal range necessarily for three. But just to give you an idea of her size, she was a very tiny person with, and her skin did not have good color. She was kind of gray. She had dark circles under her eyes. And she was not interactive with me. She was polite, but she had no desire to engage with me at all. I was scared to treat this patient because she had this allergic response to so many things that I thought if I prescribed the wrong thing, she could react to it and it could kill her. That's the thought going through my head.
Right?
I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay. So at that point, you know, as a practitioner, you sit back and what's the safest way to proceed? We did testing on her. I do testing sometimes, but most often I just treat and see how people feel because it saves people money and it doesn't change my therapeutics very often to test some things. So in this way in particular, we tested, because her reaction was related to food most of the time, we did a comprehensive digestive stool analysis testing, and it tells us what's growing in her gut, basically. Does she have the good bacteria? Does she have bad bacteria? Does she have yeast? What's growing there? And she had intestinal dysbiosis. So she had unbalanced growth of flora in the gut. She had too much of the bad bacteria and not enough of the good flora. So we treated. I didn't know how to treat dysbiosis in a pediatric patient at that point. And so I asked the lab, what am I going to do? Right. how do I treat this little person? And they said, look at this product. They told me, look at Biocidin, which is a product that I use often in my practice. And we put her on as 3 drops a day, because it's 1 drop per 10 pounds of body weight per day. And she came back in my office 2 or 3 weeks later, and she was a different kid. I mean, it was a remarkable experience to watch. Her skin was pink. She was happy. She had great energy. She was talking to me. Like, it was a really different experience. And even to this day, she still has health concerns. I mean, this is a kid who's got layers and layers of issues. I mean, she's continues to have some health concerns, but she doesn't have this reactivity to the point where she couldn't go out of her house, really. Like, she had such intense allergies that if she touched a food, anything with dairy in it, so if milk got on her skin, she'd have a reaction to it. So she's no longer confined to her home, and her quality of life is good. But it's an amazing thing to see. That transformation was incredible. And again, you know, so the first case study highlights the importance of a food sensitivity and how profound a role that can play in your health. And then the second one is how what's growing in our gut, how deeply it can affect our health. I mean, that was very eye-opening for me to see her health do a 180 like that. And then the third person I'll talk about was a patient with, and this is more run-of-the-mill sort of thing for my practice, I would say. It was a patient with chronic acne. So she's in her 20s, and she didn't used to have acne in her teenage years, when most people do, but she'd had gone through a time of a lot of stress, and over time she got the cystic acne. So it's very deep, very painful acne that has to be either treated with an injection or antibiotics to treat it. She had been on birth control pills for, I don't know, maybe 10 years or something, that she'd been on birth control pills. So she had this whole constellation of information, or, you know, that related it to her hormonal sphere. And she also lives in an area that's very high in, the water table is very high in mercury and lead. Mm-hmm. And so I'm taking all of that into account. I decided to put her on a detoxification with an estrogen sort of focus, or, you know, spearheading it with an estrogen cleanse. And some progesterone support. So she had become very estrogen dominant because her stress had pulled down her progesterone levels, and that had resulted in a cycle abnormalities and hormonal symptoms. And she did this estrogen cleanse, and she came back, and cystic acne is gone, fatigue is gone. You know, so these are, it's just fun to see as a practitioner to watch people's life change like that. And so last time I spoke to her, that it was still, she'd done a short-term cleanse, I think, you know, maybe 6 weeks or so that she had done the cleanse. And she's stayed with some foundational nutrition, so she does a good multivitamin. She may be doing some hormonal support in the form of adaptogenic herbs, so I think she's doing maca root as well. There's a product I really like called Feminescence that has a really well-studied herbal support for hormonal function. Hormones of all kinds, so it's works at the hypothalamus, so it helps with pituitary function, and that means thyroid, ovaries, adrenals, all of those things. So our ability to manage stress as well.
Nice.
So just, that's more of the kind of patient that I will see typically in my practice. So those are my case studies.
Sending a huge thank you to Dr. Strand for her sharing and for her time. We had a little bit of an abrupt ending just to keep to schedules. Not a big deal. I hope to have her back again soon, and definitely looking forward to it. If you would like to contact Dr. Jocelyn Strand, you can do so via her website, which is lakesuperiornaturalmedicine.com. You can also find her on Facebook at facebook.com/lakesuperiornaturalmedicine. And as of this recording, if you happen upon a page with a lovely lady and a cute little boy, you have probably reached the right Facebook page. Check out the website here at Wellness Renaissance at wellnessren.com. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/wellnessren. You can learn about other offerings that we have, as well as the upcoming food group events. And definitely don't forget to check out our other podcasts. Until next time, be well.